My name is Ed Badgett. I'm working for the Center of Regional History at San Diego State University. And today, March 21st, 1984, I will be interviewing Mr. Kenton Lin, former curator at the zoo from 1948 to 1976. This interview will take place in Mr. Lin's home and will be part of the oral history project of the zoo.
Okay, can you tell me something about your parents' birthplace? Their education, their occupation,
what their names were? My father was born in Dixon, Illinois, and my mother was born in Bloomington, Nebraska. They later moved to Cameron, Missouri, where I was born, and then we moved to Tulsa, Oklahoma, where I grew up and attended schools. And I attended Oklahoma A&M, now it's Oklahoma State College. Mm-hmm. I graduated there with a BS and a Master's of Science degree. And of course, this is my alma mater.
Okay, were your parents an influence on your life and your career?
Yes. When I was 7 years old, my father bought me a 12 Birmingham Rollers, and these were imported from England. And this really started my career in birds. And these are high flyers, these little Birmingham Rollers turn somersets in the air when they fly. And so one or two of them would do like 26 somersets. Mm-hmm. A very ornamental little bird, a beautiful little pigeon, mm-hmm. and these were imported directly from England.
Mm. I imagine they're quite expensive.
Well, in those days, they weren't expensive, but now they are quite expensive. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay, did you have any brothers or sisters?
I have one brother. He was in World War II, and he served under Patton. He lost a leg. Over in Europe. Mm-hmm. I have a sister that lives in Lincoln, Nebraska, 5 years older than I, and that's all of my family.
What were their names?
My sister is Muriel Stiver, and her husband run the Peter Kiewit. At Grand Island, Nebraska, heavy equipment mm-hmm. for the Peter Kiewit Construction Company for 4 years. Mm-hmm. He was a master mechanic.
Oh. So they weren't really involved in birds?
Wasn't. Although in my college days, my brother, Roland, and I had a big loss of red cardinal pigeons in Tulsa, Oklahoma. We had 1,500 birds, mm-hmm. and this is the way I paid my way through college, and I used to hitchhike home from Oklahoma A&M and dress out 500 swabs every week. We had a contract with a big restaurant in Tulsa, and this is the way I got through college.
Mm, I see. So, because of your background in birds, you went into the study of birds at in
yes,
school.
In poultry, husbandry, and animal.
Mm-hmm. I see. Can you tell me of your employment history besides the job you just mentioned? What else? Where else did you work? What other occupations?
No, I came right out of college, and I came to San Diego, mm-hmm. and I worked. Started at the San Diego Zoo in 1936. Mm-hmm. Although times were very difficult in those days, and the zoo was having very difficult times. I started working with mammals. Mm-hmm. I had the bears and the cat string for 2 years before I got transferred to the bird department. Mm-hmm.
So you were in an unfamiliar field then?
No, I knew it because I'd taken animal husbandry.
Uh-huh. So it's related.
Yeah, and while I was working with the mammals there at the San Diego Zoo. We raised polar bears, we raised jaguars, we raised leopards, we raised lions, and this was all the time. This was between 1936 and 1938.
So there was a great amount of animals at the zoo at the time, right?
Oh, yes. And we hand-fed some of the babies. This was before we had a children's zoo. And we bottle-fed some of the lions and some of the jaguars. But I was very fortunate because I'd had training in school on raising some of these animals from the day they were born.
When was the children's zoo open?
Nineteen fifty-seven.
So that's quite a ways after you came to the zoo.
Oh yes.
Can you give me the name of your wife and what she did at the zoo?
Well, my wife was Alice Marie Lynn, and she typed the first inventory in the bird department. In those days, we didn't have a secretary. And when I first came to the zoo, they only had about 40 species of birds, which was very small. In fact, we didn't have any inventory until I came and established one.
How long did she work at the zoo?
Well, she accompanied me on many of my trips, on many expeditions. She went with me in 1964 to collect the hummingbirds from Brazil. She went to with me to New Guinea when we got the birds of paradise and the koalas from Australia. She traveled all over the world with me, and we were a team. And she was a very wonderful woman and very interested in birds. I used to bring many baby birds home when the incubators in the early days used to go haywire. I used to stick the little baby cockatoos and things in our oven overnight, and I would, because they were on a 3-hour schedule, and we raised many birds that way, so she was very interested in birds.
I see. So you met her at the zoo?
Well, no, I met her at University Christian Church. She was singing in the choir, and we got married in 1937.
I see.
We have two children. I have a son, Roland, which lives in Red Bluff, California. He went to Cal Poly at San Luis Obispo. He has a bachelor's and a master's degree. Then he went to Purdue and got a master's degree in education, and he's a teacher now at Red Bluff. My daughter went to Chapman College up in Orange, California. She was a musician, and she has a master's degree in music. She teaches music. Just recently, she and her husband Bill moved to Moscow, Idaho, and he's director of athletics at the University of Idaho.
So you came to San Diego in 1936, right?
1936, yes.
Why did you come to San Diego?
I wanted a job, and I wanted to work in the San Diego Zoo. I'd written Mrs. Bensley, and of course those were Depression days, you know. And there were no openings, really, for new employees, but I walked into Mrs. Bensley's office and I said, I've come to go to work for you. Mm-hmm. And she gave me a chance, so I started working at the San Diego Zoo.
Well, this is the only zoo that you knew about?
No, but it was one of the best zoos.
Oh, was it?
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to get started in it because I wanted to. In college, I was very fortunate because I had a background of incubation. And in those days, we used to have to serve an apprenticeship on incubators and brooders. Mm-hmm. You had to serve 2 years to learn the science of incubation and brooders, which I did at the college. And this proved very helpful for me in my later years at the zoo. Mm-hmm. I was well trained in the use of incubators and brooders. Mm-hmm. In the days of the zoo.
So we're well equipped in a
background. Yeah. Well, one of the interesting things, we'll just mention one thing, like emus, which is a large bird from Australia. Mm-hmm. I had a friend here in San Diego, Jim Lyon, which was president of the Lyon Electric Company here in San Diego. And he designed a special incubator for me to hatch emu and rat-type eggs. And I hatched over 1,000 emus mm-hmm. in his machine. And these were specially designed. He was an engineer, specially designed for raising large rat-type birds.
Mm, I see. So you said when you came to the zoo, you were first in mammals, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, the first 2 years, I was on a cat and bear string, mm-hmm. and I was able to get some of them to breed, which was very nice, tigers and leopards and bears and jaguars. Which are all very interesting animals. Mm-hmm.
Why do you say that?
Well, I like mammals too. In the old days, I mean, this, of course, they were the probably the most important exhibits at the zoo mm-hmm. because we had a very small collection of birds, which wasn't very great compared to other zoos. You know, the San Diego Zoo is a very young zoo compared to some of the older zoos, like the Paris Zoo, London Zoo, mm-hmm. The German zoos, West Germany and East Germany, Berlin. We're very young. We're still a very young zoo at 68 years old. Some of those zoos are over 100 years old. Mm-hmm. And some of them are very great zoos. And the Bronx Zoo. Mm-hmm. The interesting thing, one of the interesting things in when Dr. Harry started our zoo, we used the bylaws of the Bronx Zoo, the New York Zoological Society.
Okay.
When it was forming the society, this was way back in the 20s. Uh-huh. We used the bylaws and the constitution of the Bronx Zoo in New York as a foundation.
What was it that zoo? Why did you choose that?
Well, it was the best zoo in the United States at that time.
At that time?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. No question about it.
When you first got to the San Diego Zoo, what was your first impression of it?
Oh, it was big.
It was big.
Big zoo. Mm-hmm. See, we still had the same number of acres. the San Diego Zoo was about 120 acres. Mm-hmm. Quite a nice zoo. Mm-hmm. I think we should mention some of the earlier people that worked in the San Diego Zoo and were responsible, like Kate Sessions, the horticulturist, and of course Dr. Harry, whenever he traveled all over the world too. Mm-hmm. And he always stuck seeds in his pocket. Mm-hmm. And he'd bring them back and then he'd plant them in our zoo ground, mm-hmm. which was very helpful. In the early days, when I first came to the zoo, we had 12 employees. Now it's fabulous. They have 1,200 and some employees. Just hard to realize there's that many employees. But 12 people just to run the whole zoo.
And the whole zoo?
And of course, they were experienced people and they were efficient people. Otherwise, they couldn't have done it.
Right.
No. Just to throw a few names at you, like Charlie Smith used to be a head mammal keeper. And he came from a circus. But he was very good at moving animals and handling animals. And most people today never heard of Charlie Smith. But in the history of the zoo, Charlie Smith was a very important person.
Can you name any other people that you can remember? Any significant people?
Well, Ralph Verdon was in charge of maintenance. And his son later was the director of the Humane Society. And he was essential. Bob Jarbo. We built one of the big, Ellen Browning Scripps, of course, was Scripps Howard newspaper, was a great benefactor of the zoo in the early days. She built both of our large cages, flight cages.
Right.
The first, the Scripps waiting bird cage, was built in 1923. And she donated, this is like $30,000, which is a lot of money in those days. Now the wire on a cage of this size costs $30,000 alone, without all the steel in there. In 1936, she donated the bird of prey cage. And I opened this cage, another $30,000. And this is where we raised the Andean condors. I hatched and raised 9 Andean condors in that cage from 1942 to 1952. It's a 10-year project. We hatched bald eagles in this cage. We had owls. We had hawks. All forms of birds of prey.
Quite a bit. Can you name any other people that you can remember?
Well, getting back to Bob Jarbo, of course, when we built the cage in 1936, the bird of prey cage, this was under Roosevelt, and we used WPA labor, and each rock was carried into this cage, and it was, you know, it was built on the canyon there, and Bob Jarbo was the supervisor, of course, and it turned out a beautiful cage. It was the finest flight cage in the world due to him and Charlie Faust. Charles Faust was our architect, designer. And he's still active in the San Diego Zoo. But he's a very fine person, well educated, and really a super architect. Of course, there are many, many other people that contributed to the history of San Diego Zoo. Some of the early keepers.
Can you mention some of the early keepers?
Well, there was a little mic that was on the monkey string. And of course, Edley Harwell, she's still around. And Martin and Osa Johnson, which gave us our big mountain gorillas back in the 30s. Ellie Harwell was editor of Zoo News. Ken Stott was editor of Zoo News and general curator. And these people grew up in the zoo and were a very important part in the history of the San Diego Zoo.
You mentioned Kate Sessions.
Kate Sessions was a botanist, horticulturist for the city of San Diego. And she established gardens all over the city.
Balboa Park.
In Balboa Park.
Okay, were the facilities at the zoo adequate enough to house the larger number of animals, do you think?
Well, as I said, money was very scarce in those days, and actually our first grottos for the mammals, like the bears and the lions and things, were copied from the old Hagenbeck Zoo in Germany. And Dr. Harry went over there and studied them and came back and we made plans, borrowed money from the bank to construct them, and we built them as replicas in the zoos in Germany. And they worked very well. Mm-hmm. They worked very well without any wiring for them. Mm-hmm. Good observation.
So you copied most of the facilities mm-hmm. from Europe, Germany.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
How hard was funding back then? How hard was it to get money?
Oh, it was very difficult. Mm-hmm. Very difficult in those days. Sometimes we had to go out, the keepers had to go out, and the curators had to go out and take money out of their own pocket to buy food for the birds.
Mm-hmm.
And then Bell Benchley, of course, was the first real director. During the war, when we were all drafted and in the service, Bell came down and fed all the birds at the bird yard. We took everybody right out of the zoo because mm-hmm. we were all that age to be in the service. And she loved animals and she loved birds.
Was she quite active in the zoo?
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah.
Can you tell me about her activities?
She was the only woman director, you know, in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And a very fine person. She used to drive around the car, and she knew all the animals, the gorillas and the chimpanzees and the llamas. And they all knew her.
Mm-hmm.
And now we've lost some of that because... Today, they're too interested in making money,
right.
And they don't have that personal touch that Dr. Benchley had. And of course, Dr. Schroeder was a fine director. He came after Bell. She mm-hmm. picked him. He was at Letterly, you know, and laboratories in New York. And he innovated many new things at the zoo. He did the escalator, and we were the first zoo mm-hmm. to have an escalator. Well, as our crowds increased, this was a way to get people down from the canyon up to the monkey level and up to the bird area. And Dr. Schroeder innovated this. And then he innovated the sky safari, where you could go in the nice sky safari and see the grottos and things from the air.
Mm-hmm.
And that's run from the children's zoo on clear over to the hooved area, deer and antelope and oryx and some of these
mm-hmm.
Animals. So about every 10 years, Dr. Schroeder would come up with something new like this, and of course this would bring in people.
Mm-hmm. He also had the buses.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. He brought that in also.
Oh, yes. Yes, mm-hmm. The buses were very important. Although, in the early days, we used to only have one or two buses in the zoo. And, of course, we didn't have many people to ride them either. Can you believe that? The admission was 10 cents.
To the zoo?
To the zoo. And then later they raised it to 25 cents, and it was still 25 cents when I came in 1936.
Mm-hmm.
And of course now it's way.
$5, $6.
$6, $7, yes.
Not only that, before they used to have children under 16 to get in for free.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I understand that he wanted children to go to the zoo and as an education for them.
Mm-hmm.
So he was quite interested in education, I see.
Well, then we had our Zoorama program, you know, and this started in 1951. And this went national television, which did great. They used to say this is $1 million ambassador for advertising. And we did this for 11 or 15 years. And all the different curators. I'd like to mention the curators. You know, when Dr. Schroeder was there, we had three very strong departments.
Mm-hmm.
The bird department, I was the curator. We had a reptile department. Charles E. Shaw was the curator of reptiles. And the mammal department was George Purnell.
Mm-hmm.
So Dr. Schroeder really had an easy time because he had three strong departments, and each curator were very competent and very efficient in running their own department. So all Dr. Schroeder really had to do was administration.
Mm-hmm.
But he didn't have to fool with his departments like maybe they do now, because all of our departments, I say, were very strong departments.
Mm-hmm.
And also, all three of us was trained in zoology and in our particular fields, and we were sent on expeditions all over the world, and each one of us would collect animals, and birds, and reptiles. Any one of us could do this, mm-hmm. and we did. I was fortunate that I went 21 times around the world.
Mm.
And the curators used to alternate every year. One would go, and then the other, and then the other. And this way, we kept bringing things back to the San Diego Zoo, and this is what made the San Diego Zoo the number one zoo in the world.
So the first three curators at the zoo who got all most of these animals.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell me something about each curator?
Well, George Purnell had a PhD. He was went to the University of Florida. Very fine mammalogist. He brought back the pygmy chimpanzee. That's probably the most important thing that he did.
Mm-hmm.
And Charles Shaw was a graduate of San Diego State out here.
Mm-hmm.
And he grew up under Cy Perkins, was another curator before Chuck Shaw.
Mm-hmm.
Charles Shaw. And Charles Shaw started when he was a boy, when he was about 15 years old. He used to, Cy Perkins used to have him count the scales on the different snakes and the mm-hmm. lizards. So he had a rich background and mm-hmm. a very excellent curator of reptiles.
How long was he at the zoo?
Long time. He was, I don't remember how many years he was there. He died in 69.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a long, and George Purnell was there quite a while too. They both, George Purnell died a year before Charles Shaw.
Did you have any conflicts with the different departments?
No, we all worked very closely.
Mm-hmm.
I remember Charles Shaw sent me a bill one time. I used to feed a lot of mice, white mice, laboratory mice. And at that time, they raised mice and rats in the reptile department.
Mm-hmm.
He sent me a bill one time for 3,000 mice, which I'd use on birds of prey, on hawks and eagles and
mm-hmm.
owls. He sent me a bill, and I got this bill, you know, and I kind of scared me at first. But then he called later and said it was a joke, you know. But anyway, and mealworms, we used lots of mealworms. I used to feed 3,000 mealworms a day to the insectivorous birds.
Mm-hmm.
And Chuck Shaw also had raised mealworms in the reptile house on the inside of the corridor. But I say our departments were very close. And if he wanted some bird eggs, he had some egg-eating snakes, he would come over to the bird yard and I would give him some infertile eggs and he would feed his egg-eating snake, with eggs I gave him,
mm-hmm.
and George Purnell was the same way. You know, that we were very, very close, and we worked very closely together.
Can you remember any other instances where he, any other practical jokes?
Well, we had the screamers. We had a pair of black-necked screamers, and they nested one time up on the top, on the roof of the reptile house. Mm-hmm. And they hatched the babies up there. And then they came down and went into where he had iguanas and smaller lizards there. And, of course, they would come down and eat the lettuce and that the iguanas and were eating. Actually, our birds were stealing the lettuce from his reptile.
I see.
But it was all fun. I mean, mm-hmm. we just put a lot more, and I used to take some of the lettuce over from the bird yard, even to supplement this. Yeah. And bananas, you know. Bananas are very, they were very hard to get certain years. And I used to go to the mammal department and get bananas and apples and fruits for the mammals. And then, even in the early history,